You know, we're studying this life of a disciple of Yogananda. And as Kriyananda said, I mentioned in the first class, I believe, he said his life was to be a good disciple. That there were gurus, other gurus happening in the world, who were saying they were gurus. His way was just to be a good disciple. He said, I could help people more if I was just their friend, just their simple, unassuming friend. So we're now reading things about his life with his guru. And Swami Kriyananda would always talk about the principles of the spiritual life. And stories, yes, we have been with Yogananda that we can learn from, but the principles are the higher points that are true for anybody who are walking the path. It's not individual that you happen to be in the room with somebody at that day or that you ever met them, but the universal principles are what Swami always focused on. And one universal principle of the spiritual life has to do, as we've learned, with the guru-disciple relationship, that every soul has a guru, and when you meet that guru, you're pretty far along on your path to liberation because you've said, I want to find God. And when you match up with your guru and you become a disciple, that opens yourself to the guru's influence. And the way we open ourselves to the guru's influence is by attunement, is by listening and following and perceiving what the guru has taught us in techniques. Yes, that's the science. We have Hongsa, we have techniques. You're going to be soon getting Kriya. The other people in the room will not... I'm not going to tease about the fact that they're not here tonight. We're
going to send this tape to them. So
we'll work with them. But at some point, all of you who have signed up for this Kriya Prep 3 will want to have Kriya because it's very powerful. We read the chapter, we say, of course, I want that. I want the fast route. So attunement is a key point in getting ourselves ready for Kriya, but also walking the path forever until we're free. Attunement is a real key factor because it's just all too easy to go off. It's all too easy not to really be still enough, to go deep enough, to feel the presence of God, to let go of our karma, to do the Kriya right, deeply, to open ourselves to that light and that joy and those eight aspects of God. All of that happens with attunement. Because even the technique of Kriya, you'll hear this more than once, I'm sure, is not just, oh, here we go, like a recipe. You add this much of this and this much of this and you put it in the oven and it bakes and it's perfect if you followed all the instructions well. Yeah, but this one has attunement as one of the instructions. And that's the subtle in-the-moment relationship with the consciousness of God coming through the guru. So it's so important. You know, we can get everything else wrong. You know, we can do a lot of things wrong. But if we keep saying, okay, now I will again attune myself to my guru, to the gurus of this line, to Christ and Babaji and Krishna, whoever we feel the closest with, any and all of the gurus, I will now attune myself to them and take that next step forward. Anywhere we are, that alignment is possible. There's a really fun movie, you may or may not have seen it, called Contact. It's about a person who dedicated her life as maybe astronomer, mm-hmm. whatever her field was. She was given an assignment way out in the desert where they had one of these big, fancy, electromagnetic
radio telescopes
of the highest of the science of the time. And it was totally dark, totally still, in the middle of nowhere, desert, absolutely silent. And her job with headphones was to listen to those pulses that were saying, there's something out there. There's something out there. And the kind of pulse that would say, it indicates there's life. That's what her whole job was. And she put all of her attention in listening. She believed there was something out there, which is why she became an astrophysicist, whatever she was.
Probably right, astronomer. Probably astrophysicist.
She probably was an astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. I think it was beyond being an astronomer. she really believed in her heart, for some reason, some people do and some people don't. The science wasn't there yet, but she had a firm commitment, conviction, there was life on other planets. So she was listening with all her heart, mind, and soul and strength. She'd stay up all night if there was a possibility that some period would have better ability to hear. And, you know, she was tuning her attention to that sound. And as I watched that movie, and it has a very good result, it's a fiction movie, but it shows what can happen.
When you listen deeply
when
enough.
When you listen deeply enough, and it's kind of a very spiritual movie too, because she has an experience that's like having a contact with something that's another consciousness. And if we do that, if in our meditations, you know, we finally reach a point, our thoughts are quiet, great. Our body's not nervous, great. We don't have to go anywhere, great. Our earplugs or whatever we take, you know, our spine is straight. We've done our breathing, okay, great. Now, we listen for the silence. And we listen for the presence. We watch for the light. That part of attunement in meditation, all the other things are just to help us get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because making that contact is the point. And with that contact, the guru can much more easily guide us. He said, I give you these techniques so that I can guide you. You know, so that's, and yeah, the techniques have it, but so many ways that we can attune ourselves. And that's our art in Science of Raja Yoga. That's the art that we're doing, is what way works best for me? Is it Om? You know, that way of tuning in to that subtle sound? Is it looking up at the light? What part? So now we begin, you know, to have our palette developing, to make our picture that we can find God in the process of doing. And the difficulty of attunement starts out in this chapter with Swamiji's relative coming to visit him in Mount Washington, very close relative. They had a lot of things in common growing up, and Swamiji introduces them to Master. He gives them a lunch. He's charming. He's welcoming. He's humorous. It's a lovely vibration. Swamiji's just so enjoying being in this vibration with his guru and sharing it with his family. And he gets out and he says something about Master. And, you know, he'll often get this. If you were to say something about Master to many of your friends or family, what do you mean? I got this. What do you mean, Master? Come on. That finished with the slave era. I had a friend of mine from the South. We're not slaves. You know, we fought for that. We're not slaves. What do you mean, Master? Well, his relative, as many relatives might say, you're free. You're in a democracy. You know, you can vote. You can choose. You know, you can go where you want. You're free. Don't say you're not free. And Swamiji said, he just quietly sort of said, well, but are we free? Are you free? What about those desires? And what about those attachments? You know, just let it go. But, you know, we as devotees look at, well, what do those things do, those desires and attachments? Do they take away some of our freedom? Well, yeah. We're happy and then we're not. So pretty obvious. So the benefit of having a guru and the benefit for attuning yourself to a guru is the fact that the ego is all a bundle of self-definitions that have these desires, and they're keeping us from feeling that joy and peace all the time. So at some point we say, enough, I think I want more happiness and less suffering. So then we start to make ourselves ready to find the guru. Once we meet the guru, gee, people were living with Master, and they were saying, wait a minute, I don't want to do cement. What does that have to do with finding God? And that's when Swamiji was able to give the lesson and learn the lesson and teach us the lesson. It's every part of our life that has to be part in the consciousness of God. We have to learn to see God in everything. And that's the power that it's possible to see God in everything. There are saints that have suffered. You know, we know certainly in the Christian faith and the Jewish faith, their Holocaust, there's suffering, immense suffering that goes on in the world. But what happens when a person refuses to give up their connection with God in the middle of that suffering? They become saints. They become martyrs that other people are so impressed with. They want to join that faith because if you can be happy in the middle of suffering, you've got something. And, you know, the more we can give up our identifications with our likes and dislikes, and I'm only happy when, as Swami has often given the story of the man who was thrown in prison.
I think that was Cellini, the sculptor that you may be talking about.
Yeah, there was a sculptor who displeased the powers that be. Some pope, yeah unfortunately. the high position, spiritual position, does not mean necessarily that you're liberated, as we know. But some pope didn't like what he was doing. He said, I'm not paying you. You must change it. And he just went back and forth. No, that's not fair. You're not going to not pay me. And he said, well, either you're going to do it, I'm going to throw you into prison. So he was a man standing up for his integrity. He said, well, throw me into prison. So the pope did. Threw him in a dark room, rats crawling around, damp mattress, one little light, one little window with a little light.
1 hour a day.
1 hour a day. In darkness, damp, mice around. I mean, horrible, horrible torture place. And he came out. What he did with that sunlight 1 hour a day was he would open the Bible and attune himself to the consciousness of Christ for that 1 hour a day. Just as much as he could. And then he would hold that through the other hours of the day. And he came out, and I don't know how many years he was there.
Many months, anyway. I don't know if it was years, but a long time.
He came out, he said, if you want to find bliss, he said, have somebody throw you in a dungeon, just like this, just like this, just like this, and just have an hour a day, and then just pray to God, and think about God, and you will find bliss. So, knowing that attunement is so powerful, and that we have all these blessings, it's good not to get lost in the details, but to remember it's about that contact with God in the consciousness of bliss, light, peace, joy, all those aspects. That's what's going to be our raft across the ocean. And the guru is just there to reach out to us. You know, the guru was coming to him through the book. Christ had his vibrations, his teachings, the reality of his life, all those miracles. They were because Christ had achieved self-realization. He was one with God. So that was available in that book, just as it's available in the AY and music and words of great saints. You know, we have that consciousness available to us. So attunement is what helps us go away from the ego and toward self-realization, those states of consciousness we want. And we do have people living on the other side of that wall, so we don't have mice.
Oh.
I know you hear these sounds and you say, I wonder what that is. Since we've been in this dark cave with our friend here, we're thinking, are they coming here?
You mean the mice sounds we're hearing are really just people living on the other side of the wall?
They're people. They're very friendly people. They're people sit down afterward. And here we were talking about this last night with one of our groups. After you take Kriya, you may want to be joining what's called the Sadhaka Prep Group.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just more of the same. You know, Ananda, we have many classes, many things, basically different boxes of the same ingredients.
We do take them deeper and deeper as we go.
And we change. Every time we change, every time we talk about it or get in it or meditate. So that's always going on. But the ingredients are not. They're love God, do the teachings, serve. So we were talking about the same things with the group last night. And we were talking about how important it is to be positive. And here in this attunement section, he simply says, Master always discourage negativity. He talks a little bit about why, what can happen when we start thinking that, or we break off that connection. It's such a bugger, you know, and it's so easy to slip into negativity in this world, even in a spiritual community, even when you're so sincere, because negativity happens. I mean, karma happens with our friends, our closest friends. it looks pretty icky sometimes when karma happens. We may not like that person for a while when karma happens, but we have to remember to love them. It's like with parents and their children. They say, don't ever tell your child you don't love them because they've misbehaved. Just say, you know, I love you, but that behavior, I am not happy with that behavior. You are not behaving in a way that's going to work for you or anybody else. So no, we have to talk about that behavior. You have to go to your room or not watch your TV or whatever that logical consequence is for that behavior. You have to enforce that as a parent. You have to hold up to that for the child's sake. But you never want the child to feel unloved, because that crashes things. That connection is broken between the child and the loving parent, because the parent is like the guru for the child. They have to keep that connection that helps the child feel safe and loved and encouraged.
Mm-hmm. And I did my mandated reporter training, and one of the abuse things that can happen to children is telling them you don't like them. That is a sign of a child abuser.
Yeah. People are just ignorant, but Master said he discouraged negativity in the ashram amongst each other, or even thinking that way. He was using an example of Swami being at an event that didn't have anything to do with anybody that would hear about it. It was just kind of an event that blew up, you know, the people start fighting with each other in the middle of it, and Swami was asked to play Christ during the event, so it was kind of a sacred moment, and then people started fighting. And it was like, whoa, Master said, it was a fiasco, wasn't it? Oh, yes, Master. And he could have, like, said more about it. He said, well, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it to anyone. Just don't dwell on the negative. Go to the positive as soon as you can. Work with it, solve it, make your plan, what you have to do. But don't let yourself get into the negativity if you can. Great advice.
Especially not just thought, but emotionally engaged. That's,
that's the next level.
Yeah, now you're energetically going to the astral level.
Right? Exactly.
Lower astral.
You're more caught. Yeah, when you start, you know. It's like that thought of hold your tongue, don't just blow up and yell and scream. At least count to 10, take a breath. You know, walk away, talk about it when you're calmer, because we all see what happens when other people do it, when we've tried it that way. It doesn't work as well. So yeah, if we can disengage from the negativity, talk about it in a way that can be positive, work it out, don't bury it.
Do you guys watch news?
No, especially not local evening news at all. We don't actually have TV. And we haven't had for 20 years. But I still follow the news I look at a newspaper and I look at a weekly news magazine. So I know what's going on, but I don't dwell. I certainly don't look at local news, because local news is always the worst headlines.
Yeah, the world headlines are pretty bad. I follow the Times. Swamiji always watched what was going on in the world. It's a test, because whenever I can stay positive and pray for the world by knowing what's going on, by being aware of friends who are living in different places and different things, being aware. But for many, many years, I didn't read the newspaper at all, because I was still working on choosing a positive environment. Was so important for me to keep my peace and to have a meditative consciousness, to have the ability to meditate. I needed to change my environment. I wasn't aware of the news. I figured, you know, if a big bomb goes off and I suddenly happen to be fried, Om Guru, you know, just take me. When's your time? I mean, what is there to... But I live in the world now. I'm more aware of things. You know, I'm living in a city center. I feel I kind of have a certain responsibility to be a little bit aware. I try not to dwell on the negativity that's there. I pray. Another reason to pray. But
it is one of the reasons, though, 20 years ago or more for her, I think, we just unplugged the TV. We just don't even have one in the house anymore. It's just not useful. We do videos, but we can choose uplifting content that way. We don't have to just whatever they're sending into our living room, we have to accept it. No way.
Yeah, and I finally realized, you know, this gig about what the news does. If it were objective and giving me the facts, I try and scan for that, but I try not to get into that next astral level.
Oh, the emotional response.
You know, all the emotional, and they just milk it. It's like a big soap opera, and they just milk the emotional drama because that's how they sell newspapers. That's how they get people to tune in. People like that kind of stimulation. But as a yogi, we don't want that kind of stimulation. React when you need to, act as you need to, do what you need to. But to be hooked on that constant thing that gets people hooked. Yeah, better we don't.
I know some people who also don't do news and things because it's too easy to get sucked into that kind
of thing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're great at it.
They're good at it. They, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and they have a lot of energy and creativity to making you get hooked in.
You figure, well, it's one friend who's really in that frame. It's like, if there's something important that I need to know, one of my friends will tell
that's
me.
Right.
About it.
We figure that's we right. won't miss it that the latest war just broke out. We'll hear about it.
You know, I often think, well, what can I do about it? You know, if I get information and there's something I can do to help, I want that information. But if it's just nothing I can do about it, how is the world a better place for me knowing it? Unless I pray about it. Otherwise, it's just me, you know, sinking a little bit.
Yeah, we're trying to do this all
we're
the
trying
time.
To go up.
The news just tends to do this too.
I like that. Prayer, there was that year everybody did the peace and harmony prayer.
Yeah, yeah. Fill this world with peace and harmony.
So that's nice to do with the meditations too. That's
right. Very
it's
good.
True. Fill this world with peace and harmony, peace and harmony. To say that a number of times. It was a great practice. Still is. Yeah.
And then we always ended it with fill me
and
with
fill
peace
me.
And harmony.
Because what we can do, and then we had this always these movements. We had this movement a few years ago in Ananda called Be the Change. Because you look at the world and your heart just, I really wish I could change things or change that person or change something. And one of the parts we did was quoting Gandhi and saying, if you want to change something, change yourself. And it's very powerful, simple as it may seem, but if you change your consciousness, it ripples out to the people you work with, to your family, and you feel the change that's happening in your consciousness. And the thing you wanted, which is everybody else, you all change and then I'll feel better. Yeah, nice gig if you could get it, but it doesn't happen that way. You know, people just don't
even
change
God
because
God really is not good at that.
You know, free will. He says, okay, I'm going to give you free will. I'll invite you. I'll give you lots of opportunity to attune yourself to a positive way of being. I'll give you all of this, but you have to choose it. I'm not going to make you do it because you have free will. So who are we? You know, we're not going to change people. But we can invite and encourage, and the best thing we can do is be that consciousness that we want in the world. Be peaceful if you want peace around you. And when you are peaceful, there will be an aura of peace around you. And actually, it's a fun experiment. See how it doesn't spread. You know, see how it spreads as you have peace in the middle. I remember I worked at a law firm because I needed money, and it was not a peaceful place at all. But I had lived at Ananda for a number of years, and I was determined I was...
Ananda Village.
Ananda Village, and other places too, actually, by then. But Ananda Village for out in the country, totally dedicated to peace for a number of years. And I wanted to keep that vibration, and I held it as much as I could throughout the day. And other people started mentioning to me, you know, it feels more peaceful over here now. And they didn't know it was me. I didn't say it. It was just something that... other people, it starts waking up inside of other people because that's what they want too. And if it's available in the atmosphere, if we're hungry for something, you know, we suck it in. So being the change was a good way.
It's kind of the magnetism that results from the attunement.
Absolutely.
Exactly. God is peace. So you attune yourself with that. You're held in that and it comes through you. So, you know, the ego, it's our friend. It's centered here. And, you know, I love it. It's so simple in the meditation practices, right? We're practicing bringing our energy up here and then bringing it to here.
To the medulla and then the spiritual.
To the medulla being right here. It's the mouth of God in the body, as we've been taught. And it's the seat of human will or the human ego. You know, without this, we wouldn't have what it took to bring that energy up. You know, it's a good friend. But not if it gets stuck here in the ego. I want my way. You know, I want power. I want position. I want everybody to love me. I, you know, as they say, I don't know which tradition this is, but there's a point where they say, ay, ay, ay.
That's just Spanish culture, Mexican culture.
Ay, ay, ay. But, you know, it's not a good thing.
The way you just went into it, that becomes a Jewish tradition,
maybe
I think.
But anyway,
there must be a universal tradition.
It's good news. This little I can bring it all the way up to here with our creative acts, our energy, our service, our, you know, dynamic, you know, energy we need. Focusing, energization, getting that energy up here. And then the ego, great, thank you very much. Now would you kindly just bend and bow and let that energy go to God.
At the spiritual eye.
The spiritual eye, the seat of divine will and divine consciousness in the body, super consciousness right here. So, you know, it's not a very big distance from the ego to God, but it takes all of our ability to devote, to attune to, someone used the concept last night in our class, surrender, which is very important for the ego to do, but it's not like a passive, oh, I give up, I can't do it, or you're better than I am, I'm giving up. You know, it's not a giving up. It's a giving up. It's a lot of dynamism that it is required to blast out into super consciousness. You know, it's like a rocket ship. How much fuel does it take for a rocket to leave the gravitation of the Earth? Well, we've got a lot of incarnations of being on the Earth and being in our karma and being, you know, ourselves, our likes and dislikes binding us. It takes a lot of fuel to get us out of that gravitational pull so that we can start soaring in those higher realms. So that's what we're learning to do with Kriya, our attunement, our practices, our energization, our service, our thinking about God. Come on, God. You know, prayer demands to God. All of that is about getting that fire burning to launch us out of our karma, out of our misery, out of our suffering, into this place where we have decided we want to go. Because when these guys go there, sounds pretty good. You know? So that's where we're headed. And attunement is going to help us get there like nothing else.